There's a glorious book that I stumbled across at a school book fair long ago. It's called The Quilt Maker's Gift by Jeff Brombaugh, and incredible, beautiful illustrations by Gail McCarkin. The story tells the tale of a king who has every imaginable gift in the world, but never seems to be happy. And then one day, this king learns of an old woman who sews the most beautiful quilts, but she only gives them to the poor and to the needy, and they are not ever for sale. But of course, the king becomes obsessed with getting one of these quilts. He tries to forcibly take one, and the quilt magically flies away. He tries to imprison the woman in chains, and she escapes. And eventually, the king gives up, and he asks the woman how he can receive one of her quilts. She answers him very simply, "You must give away all of your gifts, and then I will make you a quilt." Today, we remember and celebrate this notion of the reign of Christ, sometimes called Christ the King Sunday. This is a relatively new feast day, only dating back to 1925, when Pope Pontius XI added it to the Roman Catholic calendar. And it has changed names and meanings over the past 100 years as our understandings of kings and monarch and absolute power has changed as well. And this notion of Jesus as king has been a reference that I have struggled with over the past week. I certainly recognize Jesus as the Son of God in all of his divinity. And I also relate to Jesus in his humanity, as a teacher, a preacher, a healer. But the absolute king, the absolute power, that seems to smack in the face of what I believe Jesus struggles to teach us throughout the gospel readings. So as I was preparing this sermon and doing a bit of research, I came across a biblical scholar, Andrew Wright, which opened up for me a new way of thinking about this day. Andrew Wright makes the argument that it isn't easy or even straightforward to be a follower of Jesus. Much is asked of us to give up our own self-reliance and beliefs that we can make things happen if we only work hard enough, study long enough, have enough money, etc., etc. And this is, of course, reinforced by our outside secular culture, which tells us through every avenue possible that we are not enough, that we need to keep working, achieving, hoarding, accumulating, etc., etc., in order to become more. And this might be most difficult for those of us that enjoy the blessings of the status quo. We are protected by the winds of change and despair, and can often weather the changes in economy and in politics. So this invitation to be a follower of Jesus requires us to acknowledge all the human beings around us, our connection and our dependence on them. When we set aside our illusion of self-control, and it is an illusion, then we can allow ourselves to be yoked with Jesus, and in solidarity with the weak, the challenged, and every neighbor we know and have not yet met. It means that we turn ourselves truly face to face to look at God and to follow God's ways rather than our own. Andrew Wright states it most succinctly like this: we can say that we are followers of Jesus, but unless we are actually reaching out and naming the humanity of every human being, we have simply missed the point. We don't have to like everyone, but we do need to love them. Our gospel reading today from Luke jumps us all the way to Jesus' crucifixion on the cross between the two thieves. We are plunged into this moment of humanity as two criminals are arguing on both sides of Jesus and pleading with him at the same time. And Jesus, even in his last moments of his human life, offers compassion and love towards these two men next to him. He shows them what is truly meant when we are called to love all others, no matter the circumstance. He displays his humanity, but also gives us an example of how we are called to be the best versions of ourselves, not to be done alone, but with Jesus' help. So the king in my story is rather satisfied with the status quo. He mulls over this deal that the quilt maker has offered him. At first, he cannot possibly imagine giving away any of his wonderful things until he realizes he isn't actually sacrificed with them at all. And he really wants one of those quilts. He starts by giving away one marble. And although the little boy who receives it is beyond joyful over this gift, the king is not moved. He just realizes that it doesn't hurt as much as he thought it might. So he picks a few more other things to give away. And again, the recipients are overjoyed. But now the king begins to wonder, because this is not what he had expected. So he opens his doors and he begins to hand out gifts upon gifts. The story tells us that over many years, he travels the world, giving away every one of his possessions and grows more and more joyful. At the end of the story, he has made his way back to his kingdom. He is poor, in tattered clothes, and the author tells us his heart is full to bursting. And the quilt maker finds him. She wraps him in her special quilt, and when he protests, she tells him, I made a promise, and this is the quilt I made for you. The king has given away all of his possessions, his power and his authority, his privileged position in the status quo, and he has opened his life to a life of generosity and seeing the others by putting their needs ahead of his own. And I think this is the image that we can take away from our gospel reading about Jesus and the two thieves today. When you think of all the stories that they could have chosen for this feast day, for Christ the King, Jesus triumphantly transfigured between Moses and Elijah, Jesus feeding the multitudes, Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. Why this story? Why this story when Jesus is perhaps at his most vulnerable and weakened state? I would argue that this short moment in the Good Friday Easter story is the ideal selection. It is so very countercultural. It is exactly what we would not expect to happen to a leader or one with authority. Why would someone like Jesus bother to speak to other criminals? He was nothing like them. This is what we're told again and again in the Bible. His crucifixion was an injustice, an example of the Roman Empire to deter any other possible uprisings that might be coming. Jesus is used as an example to make sure no one else challenges the authorities. But the deeper truth to this reading is something that Andrew Wright argues this story bears little resemblance to the world's expectation of royalty and power. And through these very things, Jesus characterizes his whole ministry. His crucifixion When he becomes what he preaches, he uses his own life to show the world what this kingdom is that he is talking about. This Sunday, we are at the precipice of Advent. Next Sunday, we will begin the season of waiting, waiting for the incarnation of God in our world and in our lives. It is the time of witnessing Jesus' presence right here and looking ahead to Jesus being born as a human baby. It is a season of and, when we hold both truths. It is the season of remembering once again that God chose to limit God's self to be in the world with us as a human being. There is nothing that required God to do this. God could have been very satisfied with the status quo. But God so loved us that Jesus was born as a king, so different from our expectations. And we are invited once again to be part of Jesus' kingdom, giving up our own self-control and comfortable status to see the rest of humanity that we share God's creation with. Amen.